Hola, Albuquerque. Welcome to this episode of What's Up, ABQ. Within just a few weeks, we've had temperatures from hell, a visit from the president, and whitewater gushing down the arroyos. So, what else can we expect soon? Well, adventures in a dungeon, investigations of real-life murder mysteries, and attacks by masses of mystical monsters. No, this isn't the apocalypse. It's some of the games you can participate in at the 2023 MananaCon coming up August 17th through 20th at the Sheraton Uptown. In today's episode, Lorenzo and Lindsay give you a preview of New Mexico's tabletop gaming convention just around the corner. Find out how gamers of all types can join in the fun, including board, role-playing, miniature, and card games. It's inclusive, welcoming, and it's What's Up, ABQ.
Hey, Albuquerque, this is Lindsay.
This is Lorenzo.
And this is What's Up, ABQ.
What's up, Albuquerque? This is Lorenzo.
And this is Lindsay. And today we have
Tara King.
And Paul Schultenberg from MananaCon.
So, MananaCon, that is a phrase that I had never heard until you had messaged me, and then I started doing like a deep dive and kind of trying to figure out like, what does this mean? So, in your own words, tell me a little bit about what MananaCon is and what it means to you and kind of how it got started.
So, MananaCon is New Mexico's only tabletop gaming convention. We are 4 days once a year where people come and hang out together, try new games, play old favorites, meet new people. I'll let Paul talk about why we started it because it was his idea.
Yeah, so I grew up in Minnesota. Tara's originally from here in Albuquerque. And we kind of, for our early adult lives, we lived a little bit in Minneapolis, a little bit in Los Angeles, and those places both had tabletop gaming conventions. We moved here to Albuquerque, and we saw a really rich gaming community, where there's a bunch of great local game stores, there's a bunch of really popular like game groups and stuff that are out there, but nobody really had that sort of tentpole once a year kind of event for the whole community. And so instead we had sort of a bunch of small groups. And so we created this to kind of bring the whole community together to really say like, hey, this is a place that all of us can come together and really like cross-pollinate a lot of cool stuff, play a lot of games, and just see what's going on in our local gaming community that we otherwise would not have been able to see.
So the name MananaCon, I love that because it's like very specifically New Mexican. I feel like if you know, you know. But explain why you guys decided to call it MananaCon.
So we didn't have a name for it the first year, and we were calling venues to like see the space and tour it and whatever. And, you know, I grew up here. Paul did not. And he kept being like, no one is calling me back. What is happening? And I was like, it's Manana. Like, they'll call you sometime.
Whenever they get around.
Yeah, like, we might just need to show up and, like, can we get a tour right now? And so we didn't have a name and we'd been kind of kicking it around. And then part of that was, like, well, gaming isn't exactly, like, a high-octane, fast-go hobby. It's, like, pretty chill. And so then I think my sister came up with the slogan, which is game today, worry tomorrow.
I really like that.
I know, right? I was like, thank you, sister, for doing that. And so, yeah, we kind of just embraced the challenges of the, you know, because there is an upside to New Mexico's relaxed culture, which is that it's relaxed and we don't have to be stressed. So that was kind of the origin story of the name was just everybody's like, hey, I got your message 3 weeks ago. Yeah. Like, yeah, you did. I know.
I'm guilty of that.
Yeah. Tomorrow, but we'd like to donate a venue.
Exactly. Yeah. Yeah. So that's where it came from.
I really like that. Like I said, I think specifically New Mexican things are really cool. And like, if you know, you know. But also, it kind of is like a curiosity thing. Mm-hmm. Like when you had mentioned before, like in your text, you're like, "Yeah, MananaCon." I'm like, "Well, what the hell is that?" Like that could be so many things. And so it kind of like made me want to take the extra step to be like, "I'm gonna look that up. I'm gonna figure out what that means." Awesome. You know what I mean? Because it's a curiosity thing. You're feeding that curiosity.
Cool.
How many have you guys had so far?
Three. This is our third year.
Nice.
It's actually our fifth year, but of course we took a break for the pandemic, 2 year break in there. The first year the first year was up in Taos, and the last year's and this year's are both here in Albuquerque. So this one's at the Sheraton Uptown.
Okay. So when somebody comes to MananaCon this year, they got their tickets because you can get them online, mm-hmm. and we can kind of talk about that in a minute. Sure. What can they expect in the next couple of days after that?
So basically, it's 12 hours a day, 10 to 10, every day except Sunday. So it's like all day. And we have two kind of main activities. We have scheduled gaming, which is like some of these big games that are hard to get people for, hard to get to the table, or just take a lot of setup. We have those, so you can sign up in advance if you want to guarantee your spot. But the majority of what happens is open gaming. So this is just people bringing their own games from home and teaching each other, finding players. We have little signs like looking for players. So if somebody wants to start a game, they don't have quite enough people. And it's not a huge event. And so Paul and I, or, you know, honestly, the whole group kind of chips in. And if they see someone wandering, kind of like unsure of what to do, they'll be like, do you want to join whatever game we're playing right now? So those are those things. And then do you want to talk about like the flea market and stuff?
Yeah, sure.
Wait, there's a flea market?
There's a flea market. Okay.
There's a game flea market.
Let's talk about it.
Yeah. So the main attraction is definitely like playing the games, right? If you want to come to MignonaCon, it's because you want to play the games. But if you play the games, probably you also have a bunch of games that you probably want to get rid of because you're like, these are not quite for me. A happier home for this game would be good. And also, you're looking for new games because you really are excited to see what else is new in the hobby. And so you can score some great deals there because people are some people are looking to get rid of stuff. Some people are looking to buy stuff. Some people are looking to do both or just trade. That kind of stuff often happens at this. So we, part of being a convention and part of being the place where like we are gathering everybody together is like, let's give people an opportunity to do these things that they wouldn't otherwise be able to do in some of the areas. Some of the local game stores do like some kind of markets and stuff like this, but like, you know, again, with the bringing everybody together, this is one place where they can do this. We'll also have a local vendor, Etten Games and Hobbies. They have a shop on the east side and they're great, but they'll also have a vendor table there. And then we also have like kind of what Tara was saying, a game library, which is partially provided by us and partially provided by people who are there. And so, like, really, if you're intimidated by this hobby and you want to come to this event and check it out, we will be happy to connect you with some people, and we will be happy to teach you the games. You literally don't need to bring anything except yourself.
That is so cool. Like, so before we recorded, you showed us a couple of examples of some games, right?
Yeah.
And I'm totally just fresh. I don't play games, not because I don't want to.
Play games.
I mean, I play Dungeons and Dragons on Wednesdays, but it's like, you know what I mean. We're on Discord, and we have two guys that are in New York, one guy's in Florida, and then me and my friend Sean, we're here in Albuquerque, so we kind of play. So I would love to be in an in person kind of setting to check it out, like get that setting, get that feel. But what I didn't know is there's books. You showed me the role play books. I flipped through a little bit, but I'm I guess totally new, and I don't know much about games. And I'm supposing that people can come and learn more about what sorts of games there are, and you know, it's not just Monopoly and Risk, right? So like it's like what sorts of games are being played at these tables at the convention?
So we do try to get like the full range of tabletop gaming. So that's everything from like Magic the Gathering and collectible card games like that, which are huge here in Albuquerque, to board games. We've never had Monopoly or Risk at the convention so far. It doesn't mean it couldn't. Right, we could have it, but we have not yet. So lots of like strategy board games. Honestly, you know, like, when we got into this hobby, you had to go to a specialty store. They were importing stuff from like Germany, like more when he was doing it, but like it was hard to find. Nowadays, like Target has a lot of these games, so you've probably seen some of the stuff at Target or, you know, wherever. But we do love our local game store, so that's where we tend to go. But so there's a ton of like strategy board games and then role-playing games. So yeah, like Dungeons and Dragons, and then there's this whole world of like of what is called independent role-playing games. And they range from like solos, where you're playing by yourself,
I didn't even know.
Yeah, okay. Exactly.
All right, I learned something today.
Yes, so there's solo RPGs where you're just like, it's almost like a guided journaling activity, typically, with dice involved. We don't see a lot of that convention, right? Because people are there to socialize.
Like, I came here to be alone. Yeah.
Yeah. I would like to be in this room of all of you and not interact.
Yeah.
But like, we have Dread over there. So Dread is a game where it's a horror theme. And so you're telling, like, you know, you're trapped in a house with ghosts or whatever. But the actual, so D&D uses dice. Dread uses a Jenga tower. And so as you're
that, like, I totally get why that would be
like the stress. Yeah.
Yes.
Yeah.
Like, oh god, ghosts, and I can't pull that card or card block, and yeah.
And so, like, you're pulling the block out, and then, of course, like, when the tower falls, the game master, someone dies, or, like, something terrible happens. And you do, like, I've seen people play this, you just sort of, like, see their shoulders rising as the game gets longer. So those games are very inventive in terms of their mechanics and in terms of their story. And, like, one of the things I love about that particular branch of the game industry is that it's, like, so diverse in terms of the stories people are telling. There's, like, oh, you want to be, there's one called Thirsty Sword Lesbians that's like...
That is very specific.
Yeah, exactly. You can imagine what Thirsty Sword Lesbians is about. And there's that. There's D&D where you're playing like a big, strong person going off and killing an orc or whatever. And so you can kind of just get like, the world of imagination is broad, obviously.
Yeah,
so.
It's been, for me, being totally new to that world... like pretending and like role playing did not come naturally to me.
Yeah.
And I was.
I don't think it comes naturally to a lot of adults because we're kind of told at some age you have to stop, mm-hmm. which is totally not true. But
yeah. But it's been great. Like I'm 2 years in now, and
you make it sound like an addiction.
I'm two years in. No, but it's been, you know, I've been playing with guys. I've been playing for like years and years, and they're like they can just like flip into their character, and they're just like boom, and I'm like. I'm supposed to be this other character who is like something completely different, and I have my own personality, but I'm trying to learn how to be some other. So it's been really fun and like engaging, and I don't know. Yeah. So
I feel like there is a lot of maybe, and maybe not so much anymore. Again, like this is not a realm that I'm super familiar with, but I'm open. where maybe there was a stigma attached to some of the games or the people that play games and things like that. How do you kind of project that, like, games are for everybody?
Sure. I mean, one of the first is, frankly, a code of conduct. We really, like, take this kind of stuff seriously. We run a separate, private, unconnected game group called Inclusive Gaming Albuquerque. So we're really trying to, you know, we're really trying to come into this with a focus of, like, hey, this is not just, you know, the bunch of white males sitting in somebody's basement, you know, rolling some dice. If that's your game group, great, we'd love to have you. But also, like, to say that there's a really rich, there's just an amazing number of themes out there. There's an amazing number of, like, titles out there. And there's really, like, a very diverse group of people. And so there's a really interesting opportunity to address that particular segment of the population and give them somewhere to play and do that and to really do that. And so that's what we're trying to do. From specifics to how, a lot of it is from our side, it's like making sure that the themes that are representative are more in there in terms of the games we bring to the library, in terms of the games that are on the schedule, and to encourage people we know to sort of be like, okay, hey, you know, hey, I know you have this game or you have an interest in this. Would you be interested in running that? And that, you know, that goes from everything from diversity of the type of game to, you know, literally like raising diverse voices that otherwise wouldn't have a chance to be present in these types of spaces.
Yeah, I think you kind of hit the nail on the head with inclusive gaming because there's, and again, I don't know, this is like new to me too. I think there's a lot of assumptions, like when you look at a group and you're like, oh, well, that's not for me because, you know, or you already count yourself out. And so opening up those spaces to allow people from all different walks of life, all different backgrounds, different abilities and skill levels to just kind of come together and be like, no, this is for everybody. This is a social thing. We're here to like enjoy this with you and also to like kind of teach you and educate you. And then if it's for you, great. And if it's not, that's okay too, but at least you're trying it out.
Yeah. No, that could be very intimidating. Like, you know,
for me.
Coming in new, you're like, I don't know much. You guys are so awesome at this. Like, you know, it is like, I was intimidated. My friend, he's like, yeah, just come on, just check it out. It's really cool. And I've been enjoying it. And we were talking earlier this morning about how, like, if you get caught up in life and you're just like doing your job and you're like, I hate my job, this sucks. Like, a game can be that sort of like escape and sort of something that you really enjoy. And then you're interacting with other people. So I think it's all around just a great thing
for the social interaction that it brings.
Yeah. Yeah.
So I know we kind of talked about this a little, but you said there's role playing games, there's table games. What are the different, I guess, breakdowns of different types of games that people, is that a fair question?
No,
is that a huge question?
Do you want to take that one?
Sure. So the first, the short answer is I would categorize the four kinds that we really focus on as board games, role-playing games, miniatures games, and card games, especially collectible card games. The thing is, though, with all four of those genres, once you start digging into them, it blends. It starts to blend a lot. There are board games that feel like miniatures games, and miniatures games that start to feel like role-playing games, and that kind of stuff. So we're not necessarily looking at focusing on one segment of the hobby, and then those four categories together we call tabletop games because we need something to differentiate them. And so, yeah, that's the basic idea of what we have. And each one of those four spaces has had a huge renaissance of kind of individual in each of them over the last probably like 10 to 15 years.
Yeah, like each board games, if you just took board games, right, there's so many things there. So there's like historical or military focused board games. There's cooperative board games. There's strategy board games. There's more like random luck based. They can last from 5 minutes to, well, like almost as long as you can imagine, literal days. But, you know, so even just in that one category, there's so many kinds. And so we also like to look at, like, what is your experience playing it? Like, you know, is it going to be, yeah, cooperative where you're all working together? Some people really like that. Some people really hate it. You know, is there a lot of, like, direct player conflict? Some people, again, love that. And some people are just, like, very stressed out about it. Some are more economic-based. And so you're kind of, like, building an economy and an engine. And so, like, there's just a ton of, and, like, different content and stuff, too. So, really, it's kind of, especially because the hobby has grown so much. I mean, it was already growing. And then with the pandemic, everybody was like, whoever they were trapped in their house with, like, let's get some board games and do something because we're bored of each other. And so it's really, like, exponentially sort of become very diverse in all kinds of ways. It's
amazing. I mean, I think even us during the pandemic, we had that Discord with our friends John and Gio and a bunch of other people, and we were doing what, like Cards Against Humanity or something?
And then, like, they did Jackbox.
Yeah, we were trying to figure out ways to, like, stay entertained during COVID, so I can only imagine the gaming community kind of exploded at that point.
People were like, please send them to my house.
Do you guys have a favorite game?
That's a great question. We're playing one of my favorite games at the convention, which is called Mega Civilization. It sounds like scary. I'm just going to say that up front. And a lot of people, I think, hear this and are like, why would I ever? If you've played Sid Meier's Civilization, the computer game, this is a board game that inspired it. And it does take 12 hours. It takes 18 people. And you're playing your little civilization from like two people up as it grows. But it's also this great game where the rules explanation basically happens while you play it. So you're not like sitting there for 3 hours trying to absorb everything. It's like we're all playing together and it's fairly newbie friendly. And so it's like you can get people in as long as you can convince them that they'll not be suffering for 12 hours. And there's a lot of decision making throughout. Like the complexity kind of increases as the game increases. So it's just like a very elegant design. There's a lot of interaction where you're trading goods with each other, which is super fun. Sounds one of my favorites for sure. Yes.
That's really cool. So, I'm trying to picture and visualize the convention. So you just get a game and you're like, hey, we're playing Civilization. Mm-hmm. We need, how do you say, 12 players,
18
players.
Yeah.
And then you just start getting, I guess, strangers and then they're friends at the end.
Yeah, is that basically, totally. So it's like, you know, it'll be Friday. We're playing that one on Friday morning. And so we have a couple people signed up in advance. And Thursday, we're going to try to, like, you know, keep getting people in because it takes so many people. Although we don't have to have 18. But, you start the game and you're like, I don't know who this person is. And I don't know who that person is. And by the end of the day, you've generally, like, you know, we've had lunch together. We've had dinner together because you take breaks to eat. And you've got all these stories from the game and all these experiences that you can, you know, there are people I know who I would consider friends who I've only met in person to play this game. Like, you know, we used to go to a convention in Southern California. We'd play this every year. And, like, I feel like I know those people, even though really we just see each other once a year. We play this game. But it does form bonds between people.
That is so cool.
And what's your favorite game, Paul?
Well, I'm a big history dork, so my favorite game is called Here I Stand. It's about the Protestant Reformation in Europe. There's the it's a six-player game, merely six.
Only six.
Yeah. But it is also another long game. I have other ones that I really like, too. There's a little short one, which we will definitely have at the convention, which is called The Mind, which is sort of the other end of the spectrum, where literally you have there's a deck of cards between 1 and 100, so there's 100 different cards, and like the first round, you deal one card to everybody, we're not allowed to talk, and we have to play those cards in order. So it's this kind of thing where you're sort of maybe miming a little bit, or you're kind of like basically trying to time. Like, you know, if you have number one, it's easy. You just lay it on the table. But if you're looking at like 34 in your hand, you're like, okay, how long do I wait to play this before somebody who has like a lower card would play that? And that there's a lot of really great emergent bonding, frankly, that happens in the social setting around a very simple set of rules like that. Like, that's the rules. There's like a tiny bit more than that, but... And I've yet to see somebody be like, you know, grit their teeth through that one and be like, oh, I can't wait for this one to end.
Yeah. That sounds like a blast. So where do y'all find these games? You mentioned a couple of shops, like, but then I'm guessing there's, you know, the games that are mass produced. And
are you asking how do you stay informed, like, about new games or like emerging games or like?
Yeah, I mean, there's indie games, I'm sure, right? And I have a friend who makes his own board games. Like, you have like probably local folks, but. I would imagine there's like the three categories, like big games, and then maybe some indie games, and maybe even some local folks. Like, where do you guys go to find your games? And
yeah. Well, it used to be a lot easier because the hobby wasn't so big and there weren't so many options. So a lot of what we do now is we do go to local game stores, we go to Etten Games, Slice and Dice, Old Town Hobbies and Games,
Tavern of Souls.
Yeah, I'm trying to remember all the places. Empire Board Games. Well, we don't go there too much. Duke City Games.
Yeah.
So there are game stores locally, and we'll just kind of check out what they've got. Paul has been very active on Board Game Geek, which is like a website that is pretty comprehensive. Like, if it's a board game, it is on there. But then again, there's Board Game Geek and there's RPG Geek, and there is like, you know,
all the categories.
Yeah, and so we do just personally, because of our personal tastes, have a bit of a division where Paul does the board games, I do the role-playing games, we both play Magic, and then we are not great at miniature gaming, and so we're trying to meet people. It's a huge part of the Albuquerque gaming scene, and we're still trying to like figure out how it works.
Brian Sant at Etten Hobbies is a great ambassador for the minis hobby in all ways, and we're working with him, and we're hopeful that next year we can have something more structured there in place. Anyway,
but like, Kickstarter has been a huge thing in the gaming industry, and so it's like just staying on top of Kickstarter is like its own job. So, you know, doing that stuff, and then our local game group, you know, thankfully they all are keeping their ear out and bringing stuff in. And then at the con, people bring stuff that I've never heard of. You also can get stuff like smaller print games that are out of print, used, and that kind of stuff. So we also do that. But it's a big hobby. It's just getting bigger, it feels like. So it's hard to keep up.
Nice. I want to put a brief plug out there for Kickstarter, too. Kickstarter has had an absolutely revolutionary effect on the hobby because it opened publishing models to people who wanted to publish games with themes that otherwise would not have been able to be out there. And so there's been a lot of... There's become a bunch of companies who have more or less like had a big success on Kickstarter and then sort of said like, okay, this niche of the hobby, this theme really gets people. And so, you know... The joke when I came into this hobby in about like 2005-ish was like every board game had like a very serious man in brown about in a historical theme doing like very serious, like impressing the king kind of abstract victory point mechanics. And now, you know, we have games like Spirit Island, which is about like
You brought that one out, right? That's I was looking at that earlier.
It's super fun.
Cool. And it's about a group of native peoples. You play gods of the native peoples, trying to basically throw off the colonial invaders to the island. You know, that is a theme that you would never have seen like 20 years ago in the board gaming hobby. But you know, that's been a huge success, for instance, in there. And then there are other ones like, what was that? There was some goblin RPG you were telling me about.
Oh yeah, what is that called? Goblinville.
Yeah.
Where instead, you know, a lot of RPGs you're killing goblins or killing orcs. This one's like you're all hanging out being goblins and living the goblin life.
You are the goblin.
Yeah, exactly. And so like you see a lot of inversions. I have another one called The Skeletons where you're like the You know, in like a typical game, you go into the dungeon and there's skeletons or monsters there that you have to kill, and then you die and you come back and you do it again or whatever. You're the skeleton, so you just like, literally part of the game is you close your eyes and you sit in silence.
That sounds delightful. Actually,
it's very relaxing. You wait, and then you just wait for a hero to come. And then you kill the hero. Or you try, you know, because that's
usually
they're trying
die.
To kill you. Usually you die. So there's a lot of, like...
Such is life.
Poor skeletons just sitting there waiting for a hero to come to kill them. But, you know, so there's a lot of, like, inversions of what historically the games have been about. And it's been really fun to see that.
Yeah.
That sounds so fun. Yeah.
No, it's just... There's so many, like... layers to, like I had no idea, and like, you know, like I said earlier, this is not my realm or wheelhouse, not that I'm not willing to learn, it's just I had no idea. So it's really cool to sit here and like talk to somebody who actually knows what's going on and can be like, well, this might be for you, or this or that, you know. There's it's really cool to get informed. We're gonna take a short break and we will be right back.
Awesome.
Right. I say
cool.
So much.
Enchanted Equine Adventures helps reduce stress and anxiety and provides self-confidence through therapeutic riding. It's great to help with post-traumatic stress, anxiety, attention deficit disorder, autism, multiple sclerosis, traumatic brain injuries, and more. Enchanted Equine Adventures can teach you how to ride, discover horsemanship programs, and participate in equine-assisted activities. Who can benefit from therapeutic riding? Kids, seniors, veterans, first responders, people with MS, anxiety, and PTSD, as well as kids and adults with disabilities. See the services provided and find out more at EnchantedEquineNM.com. Enchanted Equine Adventures, featured here on What's Up ABQ.
All right, we're back.
We are back. So I wanted to kind of touch on ManyanaCon and sort of ask you guys where you would like to see it grow to in the next couple years. What are you hoping will happen and what are you kind of envisioning going forward?
Totally. Yeah. So it's been a bit of a bumpy ride, right? We started right before the pandemic.
Perfect timing.
Yeah, exactly. And so it was like in Taos, a bunch of our friends from various gaming communities that we've lived in came out and it was like super fun. It was fantastic. And then 2020 happened. I think we signed the contract for the venue like 2 weeks before it shut down. Like it was a mess. Yeah, it wasn't great. So then, you know, we were doing some virtual events and stuff like that, and that was fun. But it was also like very much not our business plan. And then last year, to be honest, like we were burned out from the pandemic. We had been kind of in these continual rescheduling conversations with the venue, and we were like, let's just do it with the dates we have. We're going to do very little marketing. We'll see what happens. And we had like 22 people show up, right? Considering that we basically did nothing, I was like, all right.
Not bad,
yeah,
actually.
Exactly.
It's pretty good.
And so this year feels like kind of like the first year where we're kind of doing it the way we wanted to after we moved it back to Albuquerque from Taos. So over the long haul, I would love for this to be just like an institution of the Albuquerque gaming community where everybody knows about it, everybody wants to come. And then the other thing that we've seen with other conventions is like there's the ones that get big enough and have enough structure that they can outlive their founders, whether that's literally outlive or just like if we want to stop working so hard, right? Because it's a lot of work. So, you know, what we've seen also is game conventions or just conventions in general that the founders burn out and they don't want to do it anymore. And so we're trying to make it so that it's sustainable for the two of us personally right now. And hopefully that it becomes something that we could bring more people in or transfer to somebody else. Because I just think it's such a... Gaming at conventions has given me a lot, has given us both quite a lot. And so, you know, it feels like a thing that if you're into the hobby, to not have to go to Denver, to not have to go to Phoenix or wherever, I mean... That's it just gets so expensive. So like to be able to do it here in Albuquerque and then the people you meet you could hang out with, and it's like it just builds up Albuquerque. So I'd love to just keep doing it in a way that we can kind of support. And I don't know if you have anything else.
Yeah, I think fundamentally like ManyanaCon is really mostly it is a business, but it is a business that whose main idea is to serve the community. We're small enough at this point that it's pretty much just the two of us running this with a little bit of volunteer help, a little bit of like ad hoc staff kind of thing, but nothing where it's like, hey, this is not our full-time gig or anything. And I think if we're talking about it in terms of a business structure, I think we'd be really interested in exploring as we grow a little bit more and need to put more of that structure in place, doing something like making this a B Corp or something, where we're really trying to make this make the community focus of this organization explicit. Because it's already there, it's implicit, we try to make sure it shows in our values and in our marketing and everything else that we're doing. Yes, we have a unique place as founders, but we are not, this is not ever something that, like, we're not looking to retire on this. We're not looking to, we're not looking to spin this up into some sort of, like, multinational behemoth or something. Like,
that sounds a little like podcasting, huh? Yeah.
Hey, it's a labor of love, right?
Yeah, it's a labor of love, yeah. Absolutely.
Yeah, so just capture, we're looking for ways to capture the community aspects of this because, and to Tara's point, it's very easy for a convention that's centered around a hobby like this to get addicted to volunteering and to people who are like, I'm really enthusiastic about this, and then to overload those volunteers to the point where they no longer are actually that excited to keep doing this.
It becomes a chore rather than a joy.
Yeah. So fundamentally, over the long term, what we're really looking to do is to say, like, okay, this is a good business model. We're partnering with the right people in the community who are like, yes, we have a monetary interest in continuing this. This is why we like look for sponsors every year. This is why we, you know, this is why we are doing this not necessarily just in like somebody's backyard, but rather in a hotel. And so we're trying to put these kind of structures in place so that this can live, yeah, not only for this year or next year, but like 5-10 years down the road.
So, and that kind of brings me to my next question is, how can the community help you? Like, what are, like, if you had a wish list or things that the community could kind of give back to help you guys succeed, what would those things be?
I mean, right now, honestly, the phase of our, of life of the convention would be to come and tell your friends if you're interested, right? If you know somebody who likes gaming, word of mouth has been our biggest sort of marketing tool right now. And there's only two of us. And, you know, we can't meet everyone in Albuquerque. And everyone's like, oh, it's a small town. Well, there's still actually a lot of people here.
And so, more coming every day.
Yeah, exactly. And so, like, tell people that it exists and spread the word. And then I think beyond that, like, you know, we're definitely looking at next year's convention, some more volunteer opportunities there, or, like, work trade kind of things. People would come for free. We have a designer track. So, like, we're trying to really, like, just build up Albuquerque's gaming community. So, yeah, spread the word. You can join our mailing list, like, to keep up with it. But in terms of, like, what would help would be, you know, bring your friends.
Yeah. Definitely, yeah.
If everybody on our mailing list told one friend, we would be absolutely where we'd want to be easily within, like, you know, 2 to 3 years.
Yeah.
I'm going to put a challenge out there. It's a call to action, if you will. I am going to ask, if you're listening to this right now, maybe check it out, maybe tell a friend and just see what happens. I think we were kind of talking before recording, word of mouth in Albuquerque is huge. Mm-hmm. And so when people hear things from their friends, they're more likely to want to go or want to check it out or just garner interest. So please tell your friends, please pass it on. Even if they're not gaming people, like, maybe they don't know they're gaming people yet, right?
Yes.
Yep. So let them know. Because I think it's important to support each other. You know, we talk about Albuquerque all the time. And what we want to do is change the narrative and create good things and healthy communities and good communities where people can get together and have a good time. So
Definitely. Please
share with your friends and help it grow, because I think that's a huge thing. And so that's my ask.
100%. Yeah. We're a social species, humans, right? We need to. Yeah,
that's right.
Okay.
Oh, I'm sorry. So I was going to actually also mention your shirts. You guys are wearing some really great shirts.
I do like yours. Yeah.
Have merch, or is this just for MananaCon, or how does that?
So we don't have year round merch. Okay. This shirt is last year's shirt. It says game today, worry tomorrow. Got a crow on it. And so the first year I designed the t-shirts, and I am a mediocre designer. They're not that great. But this one we paid a local designer to put together. And then this year, she doesn't live here anymore. Her name's Rachel Heitzinger. This year we paid Andrew Fernside, who, if you don't know his work, he's a local Albuquerque artist. If you've seen, you know, murals around town, he's involved in a lot of those. Very bright and colorful. And unfortunately, we don't have them yet. We're picking them up tomorrow. But we get them printed locally, too. Okay. And so there's this old game, Diplomacy, which is sort of famous for, like, backstabbing and fighting. We don't actually play it. But it's sort of a legend in the gaming world. And there's these old vintage boxes from the 60s and 70s that have like generals around a table with these funny hats. So he took our crow and put funny hats on the crow.
Oh, wow. Oh, yes. Nice. Okay.
The,
all right.
We have the diplomacy game.
I'm actually going to be taking a picture of this.
Oh, yeah.
We'll post it. No, it's really cool. So you guys can see it too.
And so, yeah, we've got this bright green t-shirt with these crows with these, like, generals hats on. That's going to be this year's t-shirt. Wow. So basically it's every so con, cool. We, like, release a new t-shirt for people to sign them when they buy their tickets.
Trust and treachery. I love it.
That is so cool.
That's, yeah, it's super fun.
Yeah. So I know you had a couple more questions. I was wondering, so for cons, conventions of this, of, like, gaming conventions and those comic conventions, things like that, people like dress up and they get into like what their fans are like. Does this happen at ManaCon or has it?
Not yet.
That's a good question.
I don't know. Yeah, like cosplay specifically. No, I haven't really seen too much of that. That starts to especially get towards the like pop culture end, and we haven't dipped our toe too much into that. Yeah. That would probably be more for like Albuquerque Comic Con or BuboniCon. There's probably a little bit of cosplaying. Yeah. BuboniCon is actually. Another local convention here that they're more general sci-fi fantasy book and movie and sort of pop culture kind of stuff. Nice.
However, I will just put the word out that if anybody wants to come in costume,
yes.
I would be delighted. Yeah. We've never had it happen. I'm not trying to say it shouldn't happen. Yeah. I would love that.
We'll do everything we
costume
can to make
cocktail
you.
Cocktail hour?
Yes!
So, how can game lovers of Albuquerque connect when maybe there's not a con going on just throughout the year? What would you suggest if maybe somebody's new to this, they want to get connected and kind of start exploring? Yes.
Totally.
For us specifically, go to our website and join our mailing list. We do occasionally run like sort of ad hoc small events. Like we'll maybe throw a single game kind of here and there. We did a virtual RPG day at one point. So we'll occasionally do that. So if you want to engage specifically with us, you can look for our mailing list. That's actually the best place to find updates for us. We also have a Facebook group. And so you can join that as well. If you're looking more to engage with the hobby in general, I would suggest our sponsor is a great place to start. If you go into Etten Hobbies and you say, I'm really interested in games, can you tell me about the events that you guys have? Or can you tell me about, you know, I want to find a game for my family, or I want to find, you know, my brother is really into these games and I'd like to kind of engage with this. Do you have a suggestion for a two-player game we could play together? Or something like that. They'd be more than happy to help you out. Beyond Etten, yeah, there's those other game shops that we mentioned. And yeah, if beyond that, like there's a lot of stuff on Kickstarter or Board Game Geek that you can research to your heart's content. If that's right.
There's also a local Discord called Nerd ABQ, though I don't run. I'm not officially affiliated with them. I'm just one of them, and they're kind of similar in the sense that they cover similar breadth of games that we do. So there's board gamers, card gamers, RPGs, whatever. It's not super active, but like definitely can help find people to game with. So yeah, it's. It's a pretty active scene here, honestly. You just have to, as with many things, have to find the right people, you know? So, but the stores are a great place.
Okay, I have not the question, but I have one more question.
Oh.
Leading up to the question, I'm sorry. I thought about this, and I'm very curious to know your opinion. How do you think the introduction of AI is going to affect the gaming community? Just a random question.
We've
been on this kick for a minute. Like, we've been having this conversation about just impact and different
and
areas that AI could have. And I'm just curious to think how you might affect the gaming
community. For me, I'm not an artist, and I had AI create my Dungeons and Dragons character.
Totally.
For me, I just gave it a prompt. And I mean, it's probably cheating, I guess, because I can't draw. But
you
anyways.
Yeah, I mean, like, that's the thing. I do feel like AI has been part of gaming for a while, right?
Yes.
Like, obviously with video games and your opponent is, like, computer opponent a lot of time. So there's that. I do feel like one of the things that has changed with Kickstarter is the art quality of games has become much higher.
Yeah.
Because when you're selling a game on Kickstarter, right, you want it to look good. You want people to be excited about it. And so, you know, when we got into the hobby, like Paul was saying, it's like serious guy in a box wearing like brown clothes.
Yeah.
You know, now it's colorful, it's beautiful, it's a lot of stuff. So the expectations of the industry have really gotten a lot higher. I would like to think that people are still going to hire human artists.
Yeah.
But I'm sure there will be games coming out where people are using AI for art and you know,
character
cover
creation
and stuff.
Yeah.
And there's, I think we'll also see things, we'll see things where people who are artists who manage to integrate that into their work will also, like, they will find it just easier to do what they want to do. I think similar to design or art or, like, writing in these games. If you have a very story-driven game, I wouldn't be surprised if you're using AI to maybe help generate ideas or maybe to write out some of the basic structure of a scene that you're then going to adapt. You know, I think you can actually see... You can see a lot of this in other areas, and it's pretty natural to sort of, like, there have been some, like, actually Planet Money did a podcast where they're like, hey, we're going to try to use AI to make our podcast.
And I think you listened to that one. I remember you telling me about it.
Maybe I did. I'm not sure.
Yeah.
Yeah,
I think you sure.
I listen to a lot of podcasts.
Yeah.
So.
Yeah. Weird.
Yeah. Well, and, like, I think there's already been, like, a Magic the Gathering controversy where an artist maybe used AI for art that they... I don't know exactly what happened. I didn't follow super closely. But, like, it'll be interesting to see, kind of, especially with big publishers like that. Like, mm-hmm. I mean, they run a huge section of the industry.
Yeah.
And so
yeah.
What if... I don't, it'll depend on if they make that policy that you can't use it or that... Like, who knows? Right, but I think for indies, it's probably going to be... help a lot of people get through creative blocks.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
I was just curious because I feel like we're kind of on this new precipice of AI integration, and it's just interesting to see how it's, like, impacting all of these different areas of life. So
yeah.
It's just
curious. There's more and more board games too that use an app as, like, an assistant. And so there's this game, Mansions of Madness, where
we've played that.
Have you played the app version? The one
no.
with the app.
I think we played it a while back, and. You have the app companion, and I'm pretty sure we played it with Casey and...
Yeah, we did, with Casey and Amy.
Yeah.
Yeah, got it.
And so, like, that
took me a minute, sorry.
Game existed before the app, and you couldn't replay it very often, because it always has, like, the same stuff happens every time. The app adds in different configurations of rooms, different timings, different stuff, and then if you start to think about, like, how much more intelligent could that app get, like, how much more replayable could a game get if... You know, we'll see where that goes.
Yeah.
I was just curious.
Very interesting. And then your NPCs can interact with everything else. So, yeah.
Yeah.
So, I don't know. All right.
All right.
Cool. So, we're wrapping up. And, of course, at the end of every podcast, we ask the most important question, which is...
I'm nervous. I know it's coming.
All right. So, being Albuquerquean, Buqueño, if you will, what is your decision, red or green?
I like both.
Yeah, that's
and I don't
fair.
Even necessarily as Christmas, but I just like very situationally, if I had to pick one, I would pick green. Like if I was had to. But I switch all the time.
All right. Hey, fair enough. No, that's it.
There you go.
We were talking before the podcast about how we were like, you know, people don't need to feel pressured. Like if they don't like chili, they could just say it. I don't like chili.
No,
it's
You,
like,
you can live
fair.
Here and if you don't like chili, it's okay.
Well, no. That's allowed, but I don't know.
Yeah.
I don't know.
We have not had anyone say it yet. But
Yeah.
I grew up here, right? I did not like chili when I lived here. Like, I would never have it. And then as soon as I moved away, I was like...
I feel like that's how it happened.
Where? Like, I couldn't... I was so upset. And you know, I learned my lesson. And
so we were in Portland recently, and we went to this natural food store, like, by the coast. And we were, like, just getting groceries. And they had 505 chili there. And we were like, oh, my God.
Yeah.
Like,
yes.
So all week, we were like, do you have that chili? Let's put it on.
We were only there for a week, too.
For a week, but it was just, like,
a
dire situation.
Yes, absolutely.
Yeah.
Absolutely.
All right. And how about you?
Yeah, it depends on the dish. Frankly, I will eat red chili sometimes, and I will eat green chili. I tend to bend toward green chili, but like I think, for instance, Sadie's red chili ribs are absolutely fantastic.
Oh, that sounds really good. Yeah,
they're so good. But like, yeah, my go-to generally, like I love Los Cuates on Lomas. Like,
oh yeah,
their carnitas are fantastic.
Yeah.
So
yeah. I used to love that there was a Los Cuates across the street from a Los Cuates. I don't remember that. Yeah, I think they closed the shop, the little one, but yeah.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, so I'll bend toward green. But
there you go. Awesome.
And, Tara, I forgot to ask you, if there's a place in town that you go...
El Bruno's.
Okay.
Absolutely. They have the papitas con carnitas, and it's like the beef I'll eat with the red, and the potatoes I'll eat with the green. Mm.
So we have tried to go there.
Oh, no.
Like... It's in the North Valley. We've tried to go there several times, and every time we try to go, it's like the wrong day or the wrong hours.
No.
And I'm like, what the heck is going on? like, we're not allowed.
Oh, I'm so sorry.
It's still on my list, so we will get there eventually.
It's super good. Yeah. They have the original ones in Cuba. And if you're ever out in Cuba, like, it is worth stopping.
So good. We tried to stop there on our way back, and it was closed. We were coming back from Portland because we lived there, and my dad's like, yeah.
We need chili now. We passed the state line. Let's go.
We rolled into town about 4:30, and we went to the door, and they close at 4, and we're like,
oh.
Like,
oh, my God. Yeah.
It's so good. It is a real restaurant.
Yeah.
It is real. I'm so sorry.
I swear there's food in there.
Someday you'll get to try it. I love that place.
We will get there. Oh, my goodness. And so I have to ask you one more question because I'm just curious. Coming from Minnesota, what was your first impression of chili? Like, were you like, what? What is this? Because I moved here from Oregon, and I remember being like, I don't understand. I don't understand what you're asking me right now. But, like, I'm just curious to know your impression of, like, chili when you got here.
Yeah. Well, you know, I was lucky enough to have Tara as my native guide to kind of, like, prepare me a little bit. And so, like, it had already come up just in conversations that, like, hey, there's a state question, and it's red or green. And it's like, well, what does that mean? And it's what kind of chili? I do remember just sort of being like, what kind of chili should it be? Like, what am I getting? I'm getting carne asada. What do you suggest? Yeah. I know the Midwest is notorious for being like, you know, really not into hot things, and that was not
into Missouri. It was brief.
It's very bland. Yes.
Yeah, that was not something that I have always kind of throughout my life been looking to broaden my palate. So I came with a certain amount of heat tolerance. It's certainly increased since I come here, but yeah, it was something that came native to me personally. I've brought other Minnesotans here, not necessarily for some of them.
Yeah.
And so, but I also try to do the service that Tara did for me, which is like, they're going to ask you red or green. Here's what it means. Mm-hmm. This is why, you know, I'm happy to make a suggestion if you want. Or you can get both, or on the side, and then you can choose.
You can get really crazy and just say, surprise me. See what happens.
Yeah.
Oh, nice. So yeah, I'm always curious to know other people's opinions because I know, like, when I moved here, I was just like,
I'm
so confused.
Yeah. I grew up here. I grew up in Santa Fe, and it was just part of my life. And I didn't know other people in other states didn't eat chili. I don't know. Burns the Zober or do all the weird things that we do.
Yeah. That was a whole new thing for me, too. I mean, like, marrying this guy, this guy right here. I've probably told this story before, but I'm off on a tangent, sorry. Like, during family gatherings when we were first married, like, his family's very northern New Mexico, like, chili on everything. I used to not be able to eat the food at holidays because it was so hot, like, all the time. So
we had,
like,
mashed potatoes in Thanksgiving, but we put red chili on it.
It's really, I mean, I like it now, but it took some time. I'd like eat before holiday meals and just be like, all right, then, well, because I'm gonna have peanut butter and jelly before we go to Thanksgiving, like, you know. But
aren't you hungry? You know, I'm okay.
I'm good. I don't need my mouth burning. I'm not a glutton for pain.
When his parents visit, we have, like, mild chili. Because it's really your dad. Your mom is very great. Yes. We'll eat anything. And so we do kind of try to accommodate people because it isn't everybody, you know.
Yeah. And that's okay.
And it is literally painful. And I like that, but I understand if not everyone likes it.
So I wanted to give us a final shout out and a thank you.
We need to get contact information too. So website, you mentioned you had a website. What's the website? All the deets.
Yes, mananacon.com. mananacon.com. So, you do not need to worry about the NA, although it should work if you manage to get it in there. You can find everything there. That will give you the event schedule for our upcoming con, gives you an easy place to join the mailing list if that's where you want, and that's the other place. Otherwise, you can search for us on Facebook, or you can go to our website, and there's a link to Facebook there.
Perfect. Yeah, we're going to try to get this published pretty quickly. So I think the convention...
It's next weekend.
Next weekend?
Yep. So it's going to start August 17th, which is Thursday, run through Sunday, August 20th. We do have full weekend passes as well as single days. So if you just want to come and try it out, you can just come any of those days. They're slightly different prices based on basically capacity, so whatever day you pick, we have a ticket. We have about 35 people coming right now, so I'm guessing it'll probably be closer to 40, 45 when it's all said and done.
We may sell out. So if you're concerned about getting your ticket, get it now.
Go get it. Yeah. So it'll be 10 hours a day. 12 hours a day, 10 to 10, Thursday, Friday, Saturday, and then 10 to 8 on Sunday. And you can walk up, like you said, unless we sell out, you should be able to walk up and join in the fun. So
awesome. Well, I'm excited for you guys, and I can't wait to see what happens. And I wanted to give a final shout out to Berkey Bakehouse because you guys provided us amazing pastries here today, and I appreciate that. It was really good.
It was fantastic. Yeah.
You know, we always say like you can't see this on the podcast, but like what I'm looking at is a thing of beauty. It's
even though there's it's crumbs now, but
there's not really much left. But
it's so good.
Yes. But thank you so much for having us in your space and allowing us to share like your excitement because it's something new for us too. So we're excited.
Thank you so much for making it work. We appreciate your time and the conversation.
Absolutely.
Great. All right. Talk to you guys in the next one.
Awesome. Thank
you. Hey, Albuquerque, could we ask you a favor? No, you don't have to drop us off at the airport or watch the kids for us, but we just want to know what you think of the What's Up ABQ podcast. Sure, it only takes a little bit of your time to listen to it, but we put hours into creating something that we hope that you'll enjoy. So if you wouldn't mind, please give us a 5-star review on your preferred platform where you listen to us. It would make us happier than Larry Barker uncovering a hidden waste of taxpayer money. Also, we'll be debuting our revamped and remodeled website soon, so stand by for that. And thanks again, Albuquerque. We love you. What's Up ABQ is back. We have more interviews with lovers, creators, doers, and dreamers of ABQ and beyond. In the meantime, follow us on Instagram and send us a message if you or somebody you know is interested in an interview. And as always, we support ABQ locals free of charge. We love you, ABQ. It's good to be back, and we'll be telling you soon, What's Up ABQ?